Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. Today, we have a great show for you. We're going to be talking about clearing creative hurdles. So in our business, we all do a lot of designing, writing, and just creating in general. And I think we all struggle with some kind of block. I think sometimes it's a feeling of maybe like we just keep creating the same things over and over again and we want something new. So that is why I'm so excited to talk with Martha Lanigan today about some specific strategies for overcoming creative hurdles. And we are out of studio today, so you might hear something a little different. And Martha was kind enough to join us from Colorado. So Martha's a longtime friend of Mindspring. Why don't you introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, thank you, Miriam. It's wonderful to join you today for this fun conversation. And thank you to Mindspring for sponsoring this engaging podcast. So my background includes a variety of work focused mostly on student experience in higher education, but also on customer success and customer experience in nonprofit and for-profit companies. My contact information is on the handout that's linked on the homepage. I'd love to hear from anybody who wants to connect.
Thank you, Martha. We will definitely have all Martha's contact information in the show notes, and we're just so excited to have you join us today. But I know we all struggle with these creative blocks, and I think if we want to talk about psychology for a second, there's some important reasons why we might be struggling, and if we can figure out why we're struggling, maybe we might be able to head them off at the pass. So that's kind of where we're going to start today, which is what causes these creative blocks? And then as we get going, we're also, Martha has some amazing ideas for overcoming them. But what are some of the causes for creative blocks, Martha?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think of creative blocks in two different ways. The first is you're stuck, and the second is you're stumped. When we're stuck, we just are literally we've reached an impasse of some kind or another. Maybe we're feeling unmotivated or uninspired. But for some reason or another, we just can't push through to get started or to get finished on a creative project. But stumped is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. That's when we maybe have a challenge or an issue that we need to work through, and we can't come up with anything except the same old stuff. You mentioned that in your lead in here. You know, we need some way to think of something new or really innovative in order to work through the issue. So those are sort of the two ways I think about creative blocks.
I love that, though. I really think it does help us capture. There are two situations here. So stuck to me is a little bit more of like a personal thing where I'm going to have to figure out my inspiration. We could even be I'm hungry, right? But stumped could mean that we can also be pulling in other people to help us. And so we're going to get actually to that later in this podcast. But I think it's very helpful for us to sort of have those two mental classifications in our head, like, am I stuck or am I stumped on this? And it's not just that buzzword, like, oh, I have writer's block. Well, no, we're really thinking here about how do I solve problems or how am I being innovative? So what are some reasons, though, if either way I'm stuck or I'm stumped, what are some reasons that those are happening?
Yeah. Well, as you can imagine, there's volumes of research and, sure. And you can go down the rabbit hole on Google. But having done quite a bit of research, it all seems to boil into sort of five primary reasons. Those are all in the handout we mentioned earlier. The five reasons start out at the basis with fear. And I'll just say right up front, sometimes just naming what you're experiencing can be a great way to clear it out of the way. You know, that old thing you used to do with your kids where you're like, well, name the monster and it'll go away.
Right.
Recognizing that you're experiencing fear or fatigue or one of these other things can be a great way to help you take the first steps towards overcoming it. So let's see the five reasons, starting with fear. Maybe you're afraid of success or failure or embarrassment or a reprimand or something like that. And fear can be underlying for many of these other reasons. Mm-hmm. The second,
for sure.
Fatigue. So are you stressed out? Did you get enough sleep last night? Could be one thing, but it could also be, you know, you're on a major project and you're feeling burned out, any of those kinds of things that could lead to burnout.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to sort of, I've been doing this for a long time. And over the years, the times of day that I'm more creative have really fluctuated. And at times it's thrown me off. So I mean, I think it's natural to think of like, okay, when you get up first thing in the morning, tackle all the creative projects and the stuff where you really need your juices flowing. And that makes sense when you think of like your body and being awake. But the interesting thing is that I've been doing a lot of writing lately and a lot more like actual creating. And for some reason, I need a couple hours to sort of plow through email and kind of put my day in order, or I do that the night before. But all of a sudden, it's more like lunchtime. I'm finding like I'm dug into a task and I'm really able to like work on it and think about it. So I say all that to say my journey, everybody's is different, but it's good to be cognizant and think through like, when does it seem easy to really get at something? And when is it always a struggle? And instead of fighting it, go with it. If you can, I understand there's lots of you listening who are like, I have 1,000 interruptions. I have no way to control my day. That's a separate issue, unfortunately. But be cognizant. In fact, I've seen recently there's some apps and some other things connected to like an Apple Watch or that can sort of tell you your rhythms and when is a good time to be sort of maybe not creative, but certainly like a block of time where you seem to be more focused. So beyond fear and fatigue, there are three other ways that you wanted to kind of highlight for us that we might be either stumped or just stuck.
Well, Miriam, you sort of talked about distractions. That definitely can be something that keeps us off task. I think of distractions as a fake cause, however, because typically we're allowing ourselves to be distracted as an avoidance ploy instead of creating that focus that you talked about earlier. Distractions are a prioritization issue, and although certainly very important for us to set aside space and time, turn off our email notifications, turn off our text messages and that kind of stuff if we really do need to focus. But be mindful of which thing is happening. Are you distracted because you got interrupted, or are you going and doing the laundry because that's a great way to avoid actually doing the task?
Right.
You, I think, have a great system for helping with prioritization, if I remember correctly, Miriam.
Yeah, it's really nothing new, but one of my sort of, borders on obsession is having a very interesting or like a customized daily planner. And I actually do make a customized digital one for myself now, but in the process of looking at way too many and most likely avoiding doing the creative work we've been talking about, so many of them now are just filled with that. Like, what are your daily top three? And it used to frustrate me because I'm like, I can't even possibly, the moment I sit down, I have 6 meetings to go to and then interruptions. But like you said, I started to realize like, no, that's a prioritization issue. If I have a day that's full of meetings, I cannot schedule that to do creative work. And I'm just being totally unrealistic. So on the days that I do have creative work, I think that's when I often sit down and say, okay, what would success look like today? That's what I ask myself. What are the top 3 things I must get done today? Everything else needs to be moved, reshuffled, whatever. Again, that's not, you know, it's a perfect world. It doesn't always work, but it also lets me walk away from my day feeling like I was successful. I did accomplish these 3 things. Or maybe for some of our listeners, it's one thing, because we really are trying to just dig into a creative writing project or a design project. But just using that kind of phrase to myself, like, what are my top 3, forces me to slow down, prioritize, and then I can kind of minimize distractions.
Such a good point. And you know, Miriam, give ourselves permission to not complete a project today, but to get some percentage of it done, right? Because that's, I think sometimes I put stuff on my, you know, like, write a book today. And then it's like, well, I might as well not even start because I know I can't finish.
Exactly. I think that actually goes to maybe your next point, which was perfectionism.
Yes, that's right. Perfectionism can be paralyzing. Not to put too much alliteration in there, but it feels like we should be in control of our own perfectionism. But I know for people who have a brain that operates that way, where we think about wanting it to be perfect, the fear of the imperfect, and there's where we're tying that fear back in again, can really stop us from making progress. This is a perfect example, not to use the word too often, but a perfect example of a monster that if we name it can be super helpful, like just acknowledging that we're stuck in a perfectionism trap instead of actually being stuck on the project can be super helpful. And the last one of the 5, so fear, fatigue, perfectionism, distractions, and then discouraged or defeated needed. So maybe we're feeling like we're not up to the task, or we've made some progress, but we haven't made as much progress as we wanted. And so we're, you know, we're beating ourselves up about it. That can be debilitating, and also can make it so that this is a project we put on the back burner, or we go do the laundry like we talked about before, instead of plowing through and creating the space to really focus and jump through or jump over the hurdles that are in front of us.
Yeah, I love that you've named those. And I think for a lot of us, just even calling that out is super helpful, like you said. And in some cases, even allows us permission, for example, discouraged or defeated, to go find a coworker and say, hey, can you take a look at this? Or I just feel like I'm not doing it right, to get some feedback or something that can help us move ahead too, by being able to say it instead of just sitting at my desk and staring at the screen for 2 hours, being able to say, or maybe saying, if I get some feedback from someone, I can let that perfectionism go, because it is more than good enough. It's just not meeting my personal standard. But
True. Or have your, I don't know if you have cheerleaders.
Yes.
If you don't know who your cheerleaders are, get a piece of paper out and write down on it who your cheerleaders are, and find that person to help you through a discouraged moment too.
I love that. That's another great point. And again, this may be all that some of our listeners need, right? Just to identify why they're stuck or stumped, if it's not enough. And we do find ourselves with a real block. And I think that happens to everyone from time to time. Maybe it's the size of the project, or maybe, like you said, we've just been doing it for so very long. You do have several strategies that we talked about. And you know, as you and I were even discussing this ahead of time, before we even get to those strategies, you had this sort of a concept of, maybe it's not a strategy, maybe we need to reframe things a little bit. And you called them juicy questions. And I love that title, because it's so creative, and it just elicits like so many mental images. Also, I think I'm probably hungry. but I love the whole juicy question. So is there a way now, if I feel like I'm focused, I'm ready to go, I'm still stuck, how can reframing things help me solve my problem?
That's a great question. Don't get me started on juicy questions. I'll go on and on, because I love, this is a favorite topic of mine. I'll just say, how we ask questions makes a huge difference to the kinds of solutions we can come up with, and how innovative we might be. I'll tell a short story from an example in my past. A while
back, I'd love that.
Dean of students for a large multi-campus college system. And I wanted to offer a new scholarship to prospective students in our medical program. So I wrote to the financial aid compliance team and I said, hey, can I offer this new needs-based scholarship? Well, it didn't take them but about 4 seconds to email me right back with
four. I would have thought it would have been two.
courteous but pointed, nope, no can do. Right. And so I stomped away, as you do sometimes. And I thought about it for a day or two. And then I sent a follow-up email. This time, the question was, we need to increase enrollment in our medical programs. How might we create financial support for prospective students to make it affordable for them to attend our programs? Well, and that took a little while longer for us to get an answer back. But what came back was a long email explaining all the hoops that I needed to jump through to create a new scholarship. Well, most of those hoops were doable. Like, we could actually get through them. And within 6 weeks, we had a new scholarship program. Hmm. Fundamentally different framing of the question.
Yes.
I think that second question also invited them to participate in solving the problem, where the first one was kind of like, here's the answer. I know it. Here's the answer. I'm not very creative or collaborative. So basically, how you ask the question, it has a big influence on the kinds of solutions people will present. When I think about juicy question, I think about a couple of things. First of all, I just talked about the fact that you want to make sure your question doesn't suppose a solution or suggest a solution embedded
right.
in the question.
Right.
Secondly, starting the question with open language. My go-to phrase is, how might we? I learned this from a wonderful consultant named Christine Chopiak. So how might we, .. How might we, for example, how might we accelerate learning, rather than a typical question, which would be something like, what can we do to shorten our program by 2 weeks? That might be the question, the way the problem is framed originally, instead of saying, how might we accelerate learning? Another great plan is to pose questions that force us to think differently about something. So an example here, what if we had an issue with enrollment in a program? I talked about that earlier. And what we've learned through student research is that kids don't want to come back to the classroom three times a week.
Yeah, no, they don't.
Real life, right? People are experiencing this. So you might be tempted to ask, quickly we go to, well, how can we have 10 more classes in Zoom or convert another program? But what if instead we asked, how might we convert more programs to flexible learning formats? That juicy question opens the dialogue to maybe new in-person formats, blended learning, even self-paced learning. It could be a really interesting dialogue, and you may not end up in a you probably will end up, I'm sorry, in a completely different place.
Absolutely. Then, like, again, you had said sort of with your first question there, it already had the solution embedded in it, the whole online. We just need to move these programs online as opposed to, I love that, flexible learning programs. Now the conversation is wide open. And like you said, you're probably going to end up with a whole host of different kinds of solutions. So that's I love that. It's very innovative, very creative.
Well, and some of them may not be viable, but there's no danger in speaking into the room and in non-viable because it may come up with something. In fact, we'll talk later about the worst possible ideas and how innovative and exciting they can be to stimulate other thoughts. So finally, sometimes we need to ask other questions to open the room up to considering new challenges. So what about a question in our example above, like, think about a time when students were really fired up about learning and the assessments showed that they actually learned a lot. What were the circumstances? What fired them up? What did they learn? That's a great, juicy, thought-provoking question to force everybody into thinking very differently. I also love questions like, what rules should we be breaking? Why do people buy our product, come to our school, engage with our stuff, et cetera? And how can we amplify that? I totally got carried away on this topic. As you can tell,
I love it. And honestly, I feel like we could, I might just take this entire section of the podcast and like print all the text out and put it on my desk. Cause I can just think of 100 times I started meetings with things that were like, and here's the solution. Agree with me now or forever hold your peace. You know, I love that. And I really love the questions too about essentially what you're asking when you said, what's a case where students are really fired up? You're saying like, what's the best case? Where have we seen something, whatever it is, a class, a product, a demonstration, anything, how have we seen this done? Amazing. Like, let's learn from those. And where are opportunities? Like if we threw all the rules out the window, what could we do with this? So those are great examples of juicy questions. And I do want to remind our listeners, if you're scrambling for your pencil and your pen right now or paper, we have a handout for you. And Martha is so accommodating. She made this great handout and we will have a link to it in the show notes. So, okay. So Martha, we've asked juicy questions and we're still a little bit stuck. I know that you have seven different strategies for our listeners and, we're going to go through these kind of fast, although I think we have some good examples in each one of them. But what we did was when you and I were talking, we broke them down into sort of individual strategies I can do on my own and strategies I can do with other people, although our listeners will notice there's definitely overlap for some of them. And they can kind of modify them the way that they want. So let's start with some individual activities. What's something I can do to sort of stimulate the creative juices?
Miriam, we'll talk about seven ideas here. And as you mentioned, we'll dive into some that are really well suited for people to do on their own. I'd love to hear because there are lots and lots more. So maybe on the LinkedIn page, the MindSpring LinkedIn page, people could post some of their own ideas where this podcast is posted. Hashtag learning well. So let's start with the first one, thought walks. This is one of my favorites, particularly if I get stuck, just to get up and leave my desk and move around. Science says the more we get blood moving through our body, in particular blood and oxygen to our brains, that will make us more able to do complex tasks and more creative just in general. But one of the most important things about a thought walk, it's not just getting up and moving around. Being purposeful about engaging with your environment. So one of my favorite stories, I was working with some engineers and an engineer went for a thought walk and came back and said, you know, all that fuel that's leaking out of the joints between pipes. I was looking at tree roots. what if I invented a fabric that would absorb the oil and draw it into a place where we could reuse it? Like, he had really thought about something he was seeing in his environment and how that could impact the challenge he was facing.
I really love that, because what a great illustration of like really being purposeful about the environment that you're in. I found for myself, so we live on a lake, but also Mine Springs located in Michigan. There's just water everywhere. And so for some reason, I'm just drawn to the water and just the blue and the calming. And so sometimes being purposeful, like taking it in, really helps our mind get charged back up again. And then opposite of that, sometimes I have like the best ideas when my mind is totally free. Like, I will solve problems in the shower. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I'll get a good idea. And I know people say this, right? Like, keep a notebook by the side of your bed. I think anymore, most people, unfortunately, it's our iPhones, right? But, you know, I try not to, like, I'll try to scratch something out in the dark. I will say like 85% of the time I look in the morning and I'm like, that's a terrible idea. But every now and then I really have like, oh yeah, like your brain is just relaxed and something pops into your head. Now, I don't know what doctors would say about quality of sleep at that point, but you know, either taking a walk and intentionally focusing on the problem, or sometimes taking a walk or doing something else and just like releasing my, as long as I'm not purposefully, like you had talked about, taking a walk just to distract myself so I'm not getting to things. Right. I love the idea of a thought walk. So what's another one?
Another one, sprints and marathons. I don't know if you activate your critic while you're writing. You mentioned earlier that you were doing a lot of writing lately. Whatever your creative endeavor, if you're painting or any kind of creativity, the more you stop to critique or edit or judge, the more you are distracting yourself from making progress. So I love the concept of sprints where you focus, maybe it's 15 minutes, maybe it's 20 minutes, turn all your interruptions off, give yourself permission to just go as fast as you can, write as much as you can, get it on paper. Don't let yourself use the backspace key. Don't try and correct typos. Don't try and edit as you go. Don't, you know, turn off your inner judge and just allow it to flow. And you've heard the phrase about a crummy first draft. I think the phrase I've heard actually uses a different word than crummy, but right, anyway, right. Like, get that first draft on paper and go as fast as you can. That's a sprint. What I find is often when I sprint, then I just get going and I end up turning a 20-minute sprint into 2 hours of super productive time. The next idea is about senses and thinking about challenging ourselves through our different senses to think about problems differently. So either just think about how do I hear this versus how do I smell this versus how do I touch this, whatever the challenge might be. Or create a sensory experience to stimulate your senses and your mind in a different frame. We can do an example of this right now. And in fact,
yeah, I'd love that.
This idea. So sit comfortably or stand comfortably in the place that you are. Close your eyes and take a deep breath in. Now think about what you are smelling in your environment. It might be the crisp smell of clean paper or your computer. Maybe you're working in a coffee shop and you can smell those muffins baking. Maybe it's the fall leaves, or in our house, it's our dog. Now shift your mind to what you are hearing. And it's interesting, our ears hear things close and far away. So think about what you hear far away. Trains, maybe an airplane, the breeze. Now focus nearby. I hear the furnace in our house. Maybe you sit next to somebody who types loudly. What are your nearby sounds? And sit for a moment with each of those senses heightened. Now turn to thinking about the challenge you're facing and how has your perspective changed? How might it change if you use your vision or your sense of touch differently? And of course, we don't often talk about them, but the two other senses are proprioceptive and vestibular, sort of how we move in space and how we feel our muscles can also be things to think about as we are facing challenges or just wanting to clear our mind and focus and move forward on a project.
I love that. I think that's a really... that particularly could be done in an office, at home, in a coffee, like really in any environment. And I think it might also be a little eye-opening. It might also help us sort of discover that, oh, I tend to be more productive when I'm hearing this or smelling this or in this environment versus a different one. And of course, we don't always have the freedom and flexibility to create the environment that we best can, you know, be creative in. But if we can, I mean, some people, even a certain sense of smell really helps them focus. So I think that there's a lot of value in the five senses, but really accessing all of them. And I had not thought about, you know, using all five of them, even in an office situation, to kind of let me reapproach my problem with a different way. So, okay, I know we're going to talk about the brain. So yes. Hit us with that one.
Right. Many of us are familiar with the concept of the fact that our left brain is focused more on logic and language and analysis, and our right brain more on creativity, emotions, and images. So one thing that we can really encourage ourselves to do is, first of all, gather all the numbers and reports for the issue. I use a firm voice. I don't know why as I'm saying that. All right. The numbers and the reports. And
sounds
the
like project right. management.
That's right. Project management. And think in that frame. Then separately, what if you draw a picture of the challenge or pull up pictures on the internet that make you think about the challenge? Get in touch with how you're feeling about the challenge, and jumping back and forth between the two, that logic and language side versus the creative and image side, can really cause your brain to wire in a different way and can be very inspiring and help to stimulate new ideas.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful. And I think even sometimes I might be working on a writing project, but sometimes I'm in charge of finding images. Again, no images that our creative team would actually use, right? Like, they're going to make everything look much better, but they want me to provide some sort of at least like kind of a basic idea of where I'm going. And just in the process of searching for images that I feel would represent this, especially if it's something very abstract, gets my mind going already. So Jerry Zanstra, Dr. Zanstra, is a frequent, you know, guest on this podcast, and we mercilessly mock him in the office for his use of a whiteboard. He has his own dedicated. It's in his office. Like, it's his, it's on wheels. He takes it everywhere. But we have all kinds of colored markers too. And there is something about diagramming or throwing something on a board, using different colors to represent different things, that it's just different than pulling up Miro and making a Miro board on my computer. And both of them have value and both of them work, but sometimes it's a physical act of using my fingers with colors in my hand to draw on a marker board that just sort of spark that internal creativity. So those are kind of individual things. Obviously, I think some of those we know could be modified to also work with a larger group. But you also had some ideas that were maybe specifically focused a little bit on groups. So can you give me, I think you have three ideas that we can do with a group to spark creativity and kind of overcome some kind of block.
Yeah. We'll kick it off with assumptions. I think that's kind of related to left brain thinking. Write down every assumption you know about the challenge or situation. So often we don't even realize the rules we're following or the assumptions we've made about a challenge. So write them all down and then ask yourself, are these things really true? And how do you know they're true? Are they really rules that apply, or are these rules that can be broken? That can be a great exercise. Yeah. Even just getting everybody in the group to write down everything they know about it can stimulate creative thinking in and of itself. And related to left brain, right brain is the idea about different perspectives. So pushing the group to ask themselves, what would a 90-year-old think about this challenge, or how might they approach it, versus a 4-year-old? How would they think about it? What might they say? How would somebody from Iceland think about this versus somebody from the Sahara thinking about it? Those kinds of contrasting perspectives can often bring very creative things. And it's could be uncomfortable, maybe even a little cringy, but I love to invite people to actually take on those personas and imagine themselves in those worlds and speak with those voices as a way to also stimulate that creativity. Being careful to not disrespect anybody, but that can be a fun way to get people involved in thinking about things differently.
Well, I was thinking about that just from a sheer perspective of being in a group. and just brainstorming those, that alone, you know, and you ask somebody what a 9-year-old thinks versus a 4-year-old thinks, like, just, it's just a fun activity. And so sometimes mm-hmm. we're just taking a mental break. We're having fun. We're all laughing together. Sometimes that alone is enough to kind of jog things a little loose in our minds. So right. When we had discussed this earlier, that was one of the ones that I was like, oh, what a great idea. Like, that just seems like a fun activity for sure to do in a group. And then I know the last one that you have is for sure my favorite. You have a great story. So tell us the last strategy and tell us this great story.
Yeah. So perhaps the most fun exercise for creativity that I've facilitated or had the pleasure of participating in is this idea of the worst case. What's the worst idea ever? This concept was invented by a cereal company that wanted, you know, they want to invent a new cereal. So they brainstormed, what's the worst cereal we could make? And somebody said, like, what if we make a poisonous cereal and it kills everybody who eats it? And they then,
which is a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. And then they took that idea and brainstormed how they could turn it into a good one. From there, they invented vitamin enriched cereals, which of course are commonplace today.
Yeah.
And in my consulting work, I'll tell you one more story because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I worked with a team of health club executives. We were doing a brainstorming activity to focus on ways that they could make their facilities more fun in keeping. They had this super fun brand, trying to take the slog out of health club, you know, like, how can it be fun? And so they did the worst idea. And out of that came ideas like, what if we filled our pools with sharks, or we poured hot lava all over the lobby of our clubs? And then thought about those, and the club that had the shark filled pools was like, we could do dive in movies, we could do in pool treasure hunts. So they
I love that.
They were thinking about their pool programming, no more just lap swimming. They were doing fun other games where they could level up. And then the other club that had lava in their lobby decided to put a hopscotch board down in their lobby. And then the next time I talked to that team, they were like, everybody who comes into the club hops through the lobby. They're all laughing.
I love that.
No matter what age they are.
Yeah.
So it's a super fun culture and a really fun way to come into the club. So that's the program. You bring everybody together. You ask them in small teams to come up with the worst possible ideas for whatever the challenges you're facing, and really, you know, tell the story about the cereal that kills everybody so they get the idea that we're not just talking about a little bit of a bad idea. We're talking about
right.
really bad ideas.
Right.
And then
right.
how can they switch those in is super fun. Everybody will be laughing. And in fact, they'll tell stories. The shark team, I saw them a year later and they were like, we still talk about sharks in the pool. And it becomes part of the company folklore.
Yeah, I love that. What a great, and when you first sent me that example, I'm like, that's a really awful, dark idea. But I can, you know, like you said, you have to make the point that anything is okay, because then that allows us to be, like you said, we throw out all the rules and we're just mm-hmm. able to be as creative as we want. So what a bunch of great ideas. I mean, this is just such a fun podcast to listen to those ideas that you have. And, again, those 7 strategies will also be in the handout. So, and they are, again, thought walks, sprints and marathons, 5 senses, right brain, left brain, different perspectives, assumptions, and like the worst solution or the worst scenario. So as we wrap up, Martha, though, any final thoughts on these? Any sort of final suggestions for us?
Just 2 quick things. 1, set small goals. So I talked earlier about, I got to finish my book today, like, or even we might be tempted to say something like, I want to write that paper by the end of the week. Instead of that, think about like, I'm going to write 2,500 words a day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or I'm going to finish this chapter today, something small. Then don't go it alone. We are often our own worst enemies. We feed our doubt and starve our compliments and praise, right? So multiple brains are better than a single brain. Get a cheerleader. We used to call them accountability buddies. Get somebody who knows
I like that term.
And can help hold you accountable for achieving those plans. And I think those are 2 also great strategies just for getting things done and pushing through when you have that block.
Yeah, I think that's a great, very great point. Having a cheerleader and setting small goals. I mean, I do that all the time with someone in our family who tends to procrastinate. And so we say every night, set your timer for 15 minutes if there's a test in a week, which might sound ridiculous, but then, you know, you're eating the elephant a bite at a time. So, well, we always end the Learning Well podcast with really, it's in spite of all the wonderful things I learned, the great guests, my favorite part is always this, what are you learning well now? And so we want to ask you, Martha, what are you learning well now? What's new on your radar? What's something that you've never done before or maybe digging into a little bit more?
Yeah, I have two things jump to mind. One's a little more personal. I just sent my eldest to college. So my husband, my youngest son, and I are learning how to be a family in sort of this new configuration.
Right.
The how of that learning is like day by day. We have definitely made some mistakes. My poor youngest son, who's fairly shy anyway, one day was like, please stop the inquisition every day after school. Because bless his heart, since he's the only kid at home, we were like pouncing on him when he walked in the door and suffocating him with questions. So that is definitely day by day, making mistakes along the way. The second thing is I'm in the middle of a career change and studying venture capital and fundraising to potentially start a new business. And that is very traditional learning. I'm reading lots of books, watching movies and videos, doing a lot of information interviews. And anybody out there who has suggestions, hit me up. I would love to know great resources to learn more about that.
No, I love that. Those are two really great, two like totally opposite things. Your first one, you and I have talked, completely resonated. We are in the exact same position. We have one left at home now. And he finally was like, Mom, I need a half an hour buffer when I walk in the door. No question. Because I'm same thing. I'm working from home a lot. I'm like, how was your day? And just like half an hour, no questions. And learning what, like, okay, we can let some things go because, you know, we're not distracted by the other two. So he gets all of our undivided attention for better and for worse. So, but again, like you said, that's trial and error, learning by mistake, tapping into our relational knowledge and what we can learn. And then this other one, for sure, books, like you said, I love that you didn't just say books and video though. You're like going out and interviewing people and learning from them. Cause like you said, we can just learn so much from other people that have already walked down the roads that we're on. So that's a fantastic idea. And if any of our listeners are out there right now and have ideas for Martha, her contact information will be in the show notes. So feel free to reach out. I know she would love that. Love to hear ideas. So thank you so much to our listeners. If you're looking to interact more with us, like Martha had suggested, she wants to hear ideas. You can find our posts at MindSpring's Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn every time we release a new podcast. So we're hoping to get more audience participation. And I know we'd love to hear your ideas on kind of overcoming these creative kinds of blocks. So thank you all for listening. We know your time is a gift, and we just really appreciate you choosing to spend it with us.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.